Welcome to Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast. Brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. Hello, Chicago, and welcome to another episode of Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast. Brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. Well, coming up on today's podcast, we have an interview with Jackie Taylor, the artistic director of the Black Ensemble Theater. She's going to be talking about her latest show, Don't Make Me Over. You heard the review last week, now listen to the interview. And of course, Tom Williams brings us two more audio reviews. And of course, as always, Chicago's theater news. So sit back, relax, and get ready to talk some theater. Hello, Chicago, and welcome to another episode of Talk Theater in Chicago's news podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Mote, bringing you the theater news for the week of July 10th, 2006. Tommy Toon and Dr. Doolittle are coming to Chicago. And that's right, Chi-Town audiences will be able to talk to the animals pretty soon. The on-again, off-again touring stage production, Dr. Doolittle, is going to be at the Chicago Cadillac Palace Theater from July 18th through the 30th. Legendary song and dance man Tommy Toon not only takes the lead, but also has directed the show as well. Throughout his prolific career, the legendary Mr. Toon has garnered many prestigious awards, including 9 Tony Awards, 8 Drama Desk Awards, and 2 Obie Awards. Now, this is a rare chance to see the legendary Tommy Toon on stage in Chicago. Do not miss it. The curtain will soon be rising on the Chicago Theater's newest theater. As you may know, the new 250-seat theater will be opening very soon in the basement of the Chicago Theater. The inaugural show will be The Big Bang, a 2-man musical starring Jed Feuer and Boyd Graham. Now, the show opens this Tuesday in the Chicago Theater downstairs. Tickets run about $40. Don't forget to call the Chicago Theater and check out the new space. Don't forget to click on over to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section. There you're going to find a very in-depth interview with Francis Limoncelli, the Director of Marketing and an ensemble member with the Lifeline Theater. Now, as many of you may remember, she adapted Lifeline's current production of Dorothy L. Sayers' Gaudy Night, as well as 2 other Sayers novels previously produced by the company. Now, go ahead and click on over to that Theater News section and read this interview. It's quite in-depth, and I must say, quite a read. Rogue Theater will be moving into a new home soon, up in Andersonville. They are going to be taking over the former home of the Chicago Jewish Theater, and that is 5123 North Clark Street. The Chicago Jewish Theater is leaving the space due to a bad debt problem they have, and Rogue Theater is stepping in to help. Stay tuned to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section to find out what Rogue is planning on doing with the space, because I know I'm interested. The 7th annual Scald Storytelling Festival will be running at the Chicago Cultural Center from July 24th through July 29th. Now, this is a collaboration between WNEP Theater and the Chicago Department of Cultural Affairs. But the timing is coincidental because the stage ticker is reporting that Don Hall has resigned as the executive director of WNEP Theater. Now, Don is a co-founder of the theater and has been with them since the beginning. And if any of you remember out there, we interviewed Don Hall a couple months back when he was producing the Chicago Improv Festival. Stay tuned to Talk Theater in Chicago as we try to find out more. Well, thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago's news podcast. Remember, we are here every Monday with more news ready to stick in your ears. So until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Mote, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.
Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's Review Podcast. Here is my review of The Dreams of Sarah Breedlove. The Dreams of Sarah Breedlove, written and directed by Regina Taylor at the Goodman Theater in Chicago. The Dreams of Sarah Breedlove is a gripping character study. Writer and director Regina Taylor's gripping portrait of Madame C.J. Walker, a.k.a. Sarah Breedlove, who lived from 1867 to 1919, is a sprawling saga of the first black woman to become a self-made millionaire. Based on fact, this fictional biography of Walker is a fascinating story as we see her emerging from a washerwoman earning $1.50 a day to an owner of a business earning over $500,000 a year with 3,000 employees. Her hair care products help shape African-American women's self-image. Taylor goes beyond a mere biography of a female entrepreneur to create a portrait of a woman who struggles to balance professional success with private happiness. Tony Award winner L. Scott Caldwell was commanding as Madame C.L. Walker. Caldwell delivers Walker's relentless drive toward achievement and her amazing focus on results amazingly well. Caldwell also depicts Madame Walker's frustration and struggles with her family life as we see her unable to control her daughter, Leah, played by Nikki E. Walker, and her inability to satisfy her second husband, C.J. Walker, played by Keith Randolph Smith. The business is her primary focus. Taylor blends the traditional black slave and African traditions and myths with modern symbolic dreams to create a compellingly rich story. We see Sarah dream about a black man wearing black feathers who entices her to pursue hair care product. The story is as much about Sarah's struggles with her shifting relationship with her daughter Leah, who becomes a wild, sexually active, rich playgirl, despite Sarah's warnings. The play is also Leah's story, as we see her acting out in a vain attempt to get the attention from her ever-traveling Sarah, or better known as Madame C.J. Walker. Leah tries to control her adopted daughter, May, played by Libia Pugh, so that she will not become the same wild, love-starved woman as she is. The lessons of time and generations of interest to playwright Regina Taylor are also aptly played out in this play. Madame C.J. Walker only trusts Freedman B. Ramson, played by Ronaldo Bryce Sr., to run her business affairs while she attends to social and political events geared toward helping black women gain respect in both the white and black communities. Told with the strength of purpose with rich developing characters, The Dreams of Sarah Breedlove contains wonderful storytelling, wonderful speeches that paint an emotional view of the struggles of black women in the early 20th century. No matter how rich Sarah becomes, she can't seem to reconcile her inability to find peace of mind with her family. This is a cautionary tale about the trappings of gaining wealth at the expense of personal happiness and family bliss. Regina Taylor's work here is terrific, reminding me of August Wilson. The cast is superb, especially L. Scott Caldwell. This is wonderful storytelling. My rating for this show, highly recommended. It is The Dreams of Sarah Breedlove at the Goodman Theater, which is located at 170 North Dearborn in Chicago. The running time is 2 hours and 30 minutes with intermission. It runs through July 23rd. For more information, call the Goodman box office at 312-443-3800. That's 312-443-3800. This is Tom Williams reminding you, go see a play this week. Thank you. Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's Review Podcast. Here is my review of Request Program. Request Program, written by Francis Xavier Croats, translated by Katrina Helm, directed by Beata Pilch, at Trapdoor Theater in Chicago. Request Program is riveting. Trapdoor Theater specializes in avant-garde, experimental, and obscure European plays that are an acquired taste. These highly theatrical works can be weird, challenging, and evocative. Some are terrific, some fall flat, but all really stretch the art form and are valid fare. Trapdoor has done some very interesting plays in the past, and I've enjoyed many of them, and I think so will you. Their latest is a one-woman show with no dialogue by German realist playwright Franz Xaver Croats. He penned Request Program in 1970. It is a fascinating work. Imagine a play that holds us for 85 minutes with only one character who never speaks. Carolyn Shoemaker delivered a splendid performance with her actions and slightly understated expressions that spoke for her. The, quote, other character here is the extremely realistic set featuring one small room in a European studio, probably in Germany. A. Joy Shoemaker and Billy Kinney did set designs. Didn't miss anything depicting the small apartment. The devil is in the details here, as we see hooks with wipes hanging, placemats for dishes, and all the little details that your eye notices because Shoemaker's other character plays off of her very well. The set is very important in this play. We see Miss Rausch, who is played, of course, by Carolyn Shoemaker, perform her after-work ritual. She opens the mail, airs out the apartment, changes clothing, and prepares a light meal while excessively compulsively dusting everything from window ledges to the top of the refrigerator to kitchen countertops. We see here go back and again making sure there is no dust, checking everything, making sure that everything is in its place. She is fastidious. We see Raj occasionally give in to a sad thought as she meticulously goes about her daily routine. She is not only a neat freak, but she must have everything in her little world in an exact order. Chairs must be lined up perfectly. Knives and forks must be exactly in place. Her paranoia is exposed by her compulsion to check the gas stove. Every time she touches one of the burners, she only uses the far left one, but she must put her hand over the other three burners to make sure that they're all off. She quickly locks and bolts the door every time she enters. She has to go outside to go to the washroom, which is up on the second floor, and she almost covers her face and almost runs there. When she comes back, she comes in, she locks the door, and leans back with that expression like, thank God I made it. She shivers and leans on the door, thankfully that she has made it home again. These detailed rituals fascinate us as we slowly learn that Rausch is a lonely, frightened woman. She's around 30 years old. When she turns on the radio to hear a Request Program, she reacts to the mood of the songs. We can only guess, since all the words and lyrics are in German. This is an interesting touch because even though most of us don't understand German, there were a few people in the audience who got some of the commercials and some of the announcers speaking in German. But you do get the idea that it's a request show and that someone is requesting a love song. And as the play moves along, we sense that Rausch's pain and her stifling isolation. She can only order and control the details of this tiny apartment. She is filled with guilt and fear of the outside world, as evidenced by her reaction to a young girl who wanders by her window singing the same sad German song as heard on the radio. She turns the radio down and we see out the kitchen window this girl, and when she notices the girl, she quickly closes the blinds and runs over into a corner, and she is shaken and hides almost on the floor. Seldom do we get a glimpse of the private world of a loner. We get hints to her angst, to her depression, and to her isolation. Her discipline, her sense of order, and her compulsive behavior make her an explosion waiting to happen. This fascinating, realistic look into frailty of human nature is riveting. Carolyn Shoemaker is fabulous in this extremely difficult role. Request Program is unique theater, so different yet so psychological that it speaks for the multitude of lonely, lost souls. Kudo to set designers and to Shoemaker for such a disciplined performance. They prove once again that less is indeed more. My rating for this program, recommended. It is Request Program is the name of the play. It is at Trapdoor Theater, which is at 1655 West Cortland in Chicago. The running time is 85 minutes with no intermission. For more information, call 773-384-0494. Once more, the number is 773-384-0494. Thank you. This is Tom Williams saying, go see a play this week. This is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our special guest today is Jackie Taylor from the Black Ensemble Theater, whose current show, Don't Make Me Over, in tribute to Dionne Warwick, is one of the best shows in town. Hello, Jackie.
Hello, Tom.
Tell us about, I know this is the Year of the Woman.
That's
and it's
correct.
Actually in almost in its second year, right? Because your
is
shows
the second year
because your
woman.
Shows just keep having legs, which is great. And this is about one of the great singers. So tell us about this current show.
Well, Dionne Warwick for me is one of the most outstanding talents of our time. I have not, I haven't heard a voice like hers since hers.
I agree.
And she. What she contributed to the industry is just phenomenal. Her family background is absolutely superb in terms of the Drinkards, who were a famous gospel group in the 50s. That was her mother and her aunt, Sissy Houston. And Dionne was just a teenager at the time, but she was also a part of that group. And came from a wonderful stock of folks and has been in show business all her life, and her life needed to be told.
It sure did, and it sings so well. It actually, you know, this is actually a Burt Bacharach, Hal David tribute also, because the two produced, I think, some of the great songs of the 60s and 80s.
Oh, my goodness. They produced... If you do a story about the 60s or the 70s and it's not Motown, then it's Hal David and Burt Bacharach.
That's true.
Because most of the music of that time that was very popular, especially the crossover music, was written by Burt Bacharach and Hal David.
So how did she get with them? You tell a little bit of the story in there.
Well, she was she had a famous gospel. She had a famous group, a teenage background group. She was a young teenager, about 16 years old, called the Gospeliers. And they were the most sought after gospel group in the industry in New York. They did all the background.
And
a lot of us
white folks don't know how big gospel music is, right?
It wasn't only gospel music.
Okay,
they did all the music. They did all of the Drifters music. Donna Washington background, all of Brooke Benton's background.
And we take background for granted, but it really adds. I mean, that's
oh my goodness.
Many times that's the whole sound.
That's the part that you remember most of all.
Yeah, that's true.
And so they were very, very famous background singers in New York. And they were singing background for the Drifters. And Burt Bacharach had written a song for the Drifters, which was a big hit back then, called Mexican Divorce.
Oh, yes.
And he heard Dionne's group, and he fell in love with Dionne's voice and asked her to sing some of his demo records. And she, in turn, started working with him and Hal David. And as you know, as they say, the rest is history.
Some of the absolutely great songs. So you're telling us what you do for research, because in these shows, you are the principal writer and director of most of the shows at Black Ensemble.
Yes, correct? Yes, that's true. That's true. For research, we research. We dig up everything and anything that we can, magazines, books, newspaper articles, anything written about the person, we dig it up.
If they're alive, like Dionne, do you talk to them?
I did. I met with Dionne Warwick in April of this year, and told her what I would like to do and asked her permission to do so. And she said, yes. And that was it.
Is she coming to see the show?
Yes, she is.
She is?
Yes.
Very good.
Yes, she will be here.
You should kind of announce that.
Well,
unless she doesn't want to. I know a lot of times they would rather not.
They like to be kind of incognito.
But that's got to be cool.
Well, it is pretty cool, and it was indeed a fabulous honor to meet Dionne Warwick. I always pictured her as this statuesque, tall woman, and she's very small. Very thin and still very beautiful and very youthful looking. She's 60 something and she is just the epitome of youth.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's, well, as you say, if you live good and you live kind, it'll be kind to you when you get older. Well, that's gotta be exciting. I've got to ask, where do you come up with the talent? You have three people. Singing Dionne. Tell us why you have three. I have a guess, but I want to hear it from you.
Well, the major reason why we have three is because the music is so overwhelming. I just think it would be just too taxing for one person. We have 23 songs in the show.
Yeah, that's what I said. That you did that for the Ella Fitzgerald show. You've done it for some others. I know the fellow Kavanaugh that was moving out. When I interviewed him, he was in it for over 2.5 years, belting those big rock songs, and it burned his voice out.
Sure.
Now on that tour, they have two people singing them, and they each do 4 out of the 8 shows. So I guess that's a trend. And now when Dionne was singing, when she's out on tour, does she do the 23 songs?
The reason that I chose these songs is because when I saw her in concert in Vegas, these are the songs that she did.
Okay. Wow.
And she did more than this, but these were the songs that she chose, and she sang everyone, and she sounded just like she did 40 years ago.
And that's a testimony to her vocals and her vocal training. But she is a professionally trained singer.
Oh yes, yeah. Oh yes, she has her master's in music, and she studied and learned her craft very, very well.
Well. The show is an obvious tribute to her, and I think that's the way to do it. Some people say that when you do these musical biographies, which is kind of the staple, let's go into that. How Black Ensemble started and where you found your niche, because when people come to your shows, I tell them just go whatever show it is. Doesn't make any difference. You don't even have to know the name of it because you're going to come out entertained and. And everyone I've brought to Black Ensemble many times, and I love to bring people who've never been here, they absolutely love the atmosphere that you've created here. It's probably the friendliest place you can ever come to see theater.
Well, I love to hear that because that's exactly what we're trying to create.
And I go, I'm going every night. I did 300 shows last year, so I get around to all the theaters.
Sure.
And it's always a pleasure to come here. People are always friendly, big smile on their faces. And you do something that is rarely done. You have the entire cast come out in the lobby and shake hands and greet the people as they leave.
Yes.
That's a tremendous touch.
It's like family.
Yeah.
It's family. And when you leave your family's house, you give them a big hug and you say, love you, see you later. And this is a family. And at the end of the shows, I just believe strongly that you have to treat people with kindness, love, and respect. And so that's how we do it.
Well, and I just wish more theaters would do it. Some of them are either, kind of cold or matter of fact, some of them aren't even friendly. And, and they could have a great show. But those little things, and I know you're always around. I've never been here when you haven't been here, too. So you're very hands-on when you run this.
Yes.
And it shows. Now, let's go back into the background. I know that you're a Loyola grad, as I am.
Yes.
And you originally were born and raised up in the projects.
Born in the projects. I was born on the west side.
On the west side, okay.
And I grew up in Cabrini on the north side.
So your testimony that just because you're from the hood doesn't mean you can't move up, and you certainly have done.
Oh, it
done
doesn't up. Matter where you're from. You can always move up.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And So tell us your background. Now you're out of Loyola. You studied what? Music?
Well, I studied theater at Loyola. I studied. Yeah, okay. I went for my master's at Roosevelt University. That was in the '80s. But when I graduated from Loyola, I went straight into professional theater. Okay. I was with Patrick Henry in Free Street Theater.
Okay.
And I had wonderful training in Free Street Theater. Just absolutely wonderful. Patrick Henry was one of the most fabulous and outstanding directors of our time. And I was lucky enough to go right from Free Street. I played the Goodman and Victory Gardens and the theaters that were producing African-American theater. And then I was lucky enough to land a feature role in the film Cooley High.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah,
okay.
And Cooley High.
That was quite a film in its day.
Yeah, and it kind of propelled me into a whole another industry in terms of the film industry. And what I noticed was that outside of Cooley High, there was really, it was the black exploitation era. And I had the opportunity to be cast in several films and decided that, first of all, I did not want to perpetuate the images that were being perpetuated. And I thought they were inhuman, anti-women, anti-black, anti-human being. I just thought they were absolutely ridiculous. So I decided that really the only way to control the images and to shape the images is to have the control over the images ourselves.
So you turned down these films?
Yes.
Wow.
And
I have nothing but respect, because I imagine that was financially you took quite a hit, I would think.
Yeah, I took a hit. My agent took a hit. We all took a hit. But it's not enough money in the world to perpetuate sickness. And
I agree.
Films perpetuated violence and sickness. And it's,
I remember those. And it was, a lot of us felt that way about those. I wouldn't watch them.
It's still very popular today. I mean, the industry hasn't changed that much. It has changed, but very slowly. And I'm afraid not for the better in a lot of areas. But I decided that I was going to start a theater so that we could tell our stories ourselves, and to supply professional jobs on an ongoing basis to the artists in the city, because we needed more African-American outlets. We couldn't be dependent on the wonderful Victory Gardens, who I love dearly and who was always producing African-American theater, or the Goodman Theater, that I also respect their choices and their work. But we needed to be able to do that for ourselves. And we did have some African-American theaters at the time, but we needed more. And that's why I started Black Ensemble.
Okay. But what, now, how did you come up with the niche you did? You do nothing but musicals.
We only produce musicals. See, I started the theater with the mission that I still have today. And that mission is to utilize theater to help eradicate racism from our society. That is the mission. I've been told that is quite a mission, and it most certainly is. And will it be done in my lifetime? Probably not, but the seed is planted.
Absolutely. You know, where else can you go and see entertainment and have a mixed older, younger, black, white audience, and they're all toe-tapping, they're all holding hands at times, clapping and cheering, and it's all about inclusion, and that's the feeling you get in your shows. Which really makes him remarkable. And I brought a young college kid who had never seen your shows to the last one. He goes, what a feeling. I've never seen such energy. And everybody gets along here so well. And I go, yeah, wouldn't it be great if the whole world was like, so you are making the first step.
Yes, we are. We are. We are planting the seed, and that seed will grow. But it has to start somewhere. And that's the mission of the company.
But why the musicals? Because,
Music crosses cultural barriers.
I agree.
Already. Why not use a medium that already is doing what you're trying to do? And many years ago, I started with a musical. I started with The Other Cinderella that launched the Black Ensemble Theater. And that was in 1976. And that musical ran for 2 years. Then we tried other other vent. We tried other entities. We went into classical theater, which flopped tremendously. Then we did Tennessee Williams. We did Streetcar Named Desire, Julius Caesar's Medea, Julius Caesar, Shakespeare's Medea. We did, and those had some cross over appeal. But then in 1984, a young man by the name of Jimmy Tillman, he's the drummer. He brought me a high school script based off of Muddy Waters, the Hoochie Coochie Man, because he's also a teacher. And he had put this script together for his high school kids. And he said, Miss Taylor, I have a script that I think you might be interested in that I think might work for the Black Ensemble Theater, because blues is universal.
Absolutely.
And I didn't know that much about the blues, but I liked the idea of the universality of this script. So I took the script, and Jimmy and I worked on it and developed it into a play starring Roy Hightower, who is now known as Dr. Root. And it hit big time. We ran Muddy Waters, the Hoochie Coochie Man, for almost 3 years.
It was awesome. It's still one of the great shows ever produced in Chicago. Yes.
And I saw my audience go from all Black, which is wonderful, but if you're going to educate, you have to bring the people together. You have Absolutely. To have a diverse audience. If you're going to educate people, that is the basis of eliminating racism, education. So I saw my audience go from all African American overnight to 70-30, 60-40, 50-50 with that one play. And I said, that is the key. The music already has a cross-cultural appeal. I'm trying to bring people in through different theatrical entities like Shakespeare or classical pieces or popular pieces. But music already speaks to all ages.
It sure does. Because, you know, I grew up. Listening to Black music on those so-called forbidden stations, because us white folk, we weren't supposed to listen to that. I mean, you remember those, and you've dealt with that.
In
some of your plays, and and so now when we see these people coming alive again, as you bring them alive in these shows, we realize, yeah, that we're hey, you liked it, we all like that.
That's
music.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. So that. When I saw that, I said, okay, well, let's try this again. Okay. And we produced the story of Otis Redding, and it did the same thing. I said, I think we have something here.
Yeah.
And decided, okay, we had a niche. And we had a niche that people liked and enjoyed, and it was serving the mission of the organization. So we decided to continue. And to stay in that, you know, it's like McDonald's. McDonald's will never get rid of the McDonald's hamburger.
You're absolutely right. Once you find a formula that works, and it's within you, and the mission is certainly valid, both from a social point of view, political, ethical, and as an entertainment value. I mean, you mentioned Jimmy Tillman. What a job he does. And your musical arranger,
Thomas Washington. They're both absolutely fabulous.
I mean, I've often said your shows are terrific if you didn't have any singers. Just as musical concerts, these guys can really, really play.
Yes.
And they can play anything.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, all right. So let's keep going now. So you found the niche, and you developed your stories as kind of musical biographies. What I've always liked about your stories is although they are certainly in tribute to most of the people, because you don't do negative things, you're not afraid to say when they screwed up. I mean, I the Jackie Wilson story, for
right.
one thing,
you
didn't cover up some of the things he did.
Well, you couldn't cover up Jackie Wilson. I mean,
the fact that you would not do that, because you're about honesty too, and it comes across. You also weren't afraid to say when some of the white producers ripped off the Blacks, and then later on in a couple of shows you mentioned about how Black producers were ripping off other black performers. So you say it the way it is. And that's part of the honesty that comes across that, that everyone can relate to. Because you hear the audience is answering, which is something cool. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And what made you do that? Because a lot of people feel they have to like either alibi or, you know, take a side almost like they're advocating in court rather than just being honest.
Well, you know, it's cliche, but honesty is the best policy. And the basic thing is no one is perfect. None of us are. We all have our issues. We all have our skeletons in the closet. And when you let human beings know that, when you remind us that we're all the same, we all have issues, we all have problems, we all have great times, we all have bad times, then we can relate to one another.
Right, because it's nothing, there's no propaganda.
No.
At all in your shows. And that's not always the case in different types of theater that I've been to. And there's nothing more offensive to me as an audience member is when somebody's trying to shove down a political point of view too hard on me. You know, tell the story and let it fall in where it does. And I think that really adds a lot of depth to it. Also, I think your stories try and look for the good. And they're trying to uplifting, because many of the common stories that I are people who started out, you know, in really rough circumstances and made it. So these are very inspirational just by the facts of the, you know, what they had, folks had to put up with.
Well, my philosophy is theater is very expensive idiom. And I don't want to produce something that is going to have my audience feel bad when they leave. I don't want them to feel puzzled. I want the audience to leave feeling spirit-filled and inspirational and uplifted. That's, for me, that's the whole point of doing this. Anything else, they can turn on the news if they want to question society, if they want to feel, they want the murder rate of the day, they can get that at 6, 5, 9, 12, 4, and 9 o'clock at night.
That's true.
When you come to the Black Ensemble Theater, you're going to feel good when you leave, because that is the point of this theater.
And you feel good in your soul too.
Yes.
And you feel so entertained. Sometimes I leave tired. I'm told that my leg hurts because there's nothing like great music performed live. But you got to tell us, where do you get this talent pool that you come up with? Because if you need someone young, you come up. If you need someone older, you come up. You need someone with a little weight on them. But they're all tremendous.
Well, Chicago has an abundance of talent.
It
just
sure does.
An overwhelming abundance of talent. And when you work at the Black Ensemble Theater, there is a system that we have in developing our talent. Because everyone has to be developed. No one is perfect. And if they think they're perfect and that they don't need to be worked on, then they don't work here. Because the first thing that happens is they go into development.
So they're like an ensemble or whatever,
well,
whatever it takes.
We have physical training. We have emotional training. We have theatrical training. And I'm also a teacher. I've been a teacher for 32 years. So it's very easy for me to see a wonderful talent that is a fabulous singer, but not an actor, and turn that fabulous singer into a fabulous actor.
Now, this is a story. Tell us more, because this is a story a lot of people don't know. Because generally, when you wear your director's hat, it's you have an audition. That one's great. That one can sing, and that boom, and then you grab them and you go. But you're about developing the people.
We develop our talent, and that's the difference. That's what people... you're not supposed to see that, because that's not for you to see. But
right, when we see them, they're already a finished
product. They're there.
Yeah.
They're there. But our talent is developed. They're trained, and they have to abide by a certain spiritualism when they work here, a certain energy when they work here. Everybody, and they call it boot camp. My actors call it boot camp, where they
tell us about it. That's great.
Boot camp.
Let them know when they come here.
The first 3 weeks is boot camp.
Okay.
And what we do at boot camp is we literally every night have an hour and a half of workout, physical workout. And it is a physical workout. And most of the people who come are not at the level that we need them to be, because you have to have a certain energy on our stage.
Yes. And they always, everyone has it. And just sometimes just making entrances and exit up and down those stairs.
Sure.
And all that running around they have to do.
Sure. Yeah. So we spend at least 3 weeks in boot camp and developing not only the physicalness, but the soul and the spirit, and learning how to work together, learning how to emanate our talent from the stage. And then we always have different levels of actors, some people who have never acted before, some people who are very strong actors, and we have to develop techniques that will strengthen the actors who are first time actors and make them comparable to the actors who,
because besides singing, they have to play the role of who
right.
they're doing. So they're not, that's that we always like, they don't just come out and belt out a number and then,
no.
and then walk away.
No, they have to be actors. And to me, an actor is a person that can sing, that can make you believe they can sing, dance, and act.
Okay. And what's cool, particularly in all these big name shows you're doing, the Ellis Show and the Dionne Warwick Show, is you don't have the singers imitate. You have them sing in the style of, but they still have enough room to be themselves in there, which I think adds an element.
Well, the best imitation is just an imitation. But when you're allowed to, as long as you stay within the style
right.
of the artist, and you're allowed to grow from there, you can do so much more.
I agree, because in the last show, listening to these songs that I grew up with, a couple of times I just closed my eyes and I swear she was on the stage. and it was one of your great. So tell us who the three ladies are that are.
The three Dionnes are Alexis Rogers, Paulette Bruce, and Carrie. Carrie only has one name. And that's Carrie. Those are the three Dionnes.
And they are outstanding. And each one brings a little bit different.
Well, that's why I chose each one, because each one has a little nuance of Dionne Warwick within their voice that the other one doesn't have.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, okay, if I bring these three together, then I got at least one strong Dionne.
And you made such a good judgment on who could sing which song, because the finished product was all I heard was I heard them, but I also heard Dionne doing those numbers I grew up with,
right?
So it worked very well. You did that with the Ella Fitzgerald show that you did, which I think was one of the best.
Thank you.
But now let me ask you a couple things. Now I know the other Cinderella is your baby, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But let me pin you down a little bit. What are some of the other shows you feel real proud about?
Well, of course, we've mentioned it, but I'll mention it again, sure. And that's the Jackie Wilson story.
Yes.
I feel
that was awesome.
Really proud. That took us to New York and took us to, not that that's the all of all. Chicago, for me, is the all of all, and will always be in terms of the cultural entity of our environment. It's just number one.
Tell us what happened when you went to New York at the Apollo.
We were greatly received. We were supposed to run for 2 weeks. We ran for 4 weeks. And
didn't you outsell the Broadway musicals?
I don't know.
I said I'd heard percentage wise and so forth that you guys outsold any of the big Broadway shows.
I wasn't paying attention to who we outsold or what. My
focus, I had a good source on that.
My focus was on the show and ensuring that the audience had the Black Ensemble Theater experience.
And you created, among the stars you created, Chester Gregory. I think it was Hedy Weiss said, when New York sees him, he'll never come back.
Well,
he helped make him a star.
He's on Broadway right now.
Yeah, what's he doing? The
Tarzan,
and he did Hairspray.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to feel good about that, because that's a young actor who you developed.
Oh, sure, we feel great about it. But you know, we've had others, and we will continue to have more. That's the beauty of working at the Black Ensemble Theater.
Well, that's why I get a little aggravated, and I won't mention the theater group because I really love their work, but I really hate when they bring shows in here and they bring African American talent from around the country. They can cast the shows here.
Oh, sure. Sure.
And you know what I'm talking about. Not that the people aren't good that they bring.
No, they're
but
they're fine.
I'm real partial. It's the same what I would say about Marriott when they have the, you know, when they bring in New Yorkers to do the shows at Marriott, when we have such a great
some people pool. Have a strange mindset. You know, they still put more value on what's outside rather than what's in your own backyard.
And yet I've talked to some of the New York actors who would kill to come and do shows here in Chicago.
Oh, sure. Because Chicago is number one right now in the country.
Yeah. The only thing New York might have over us is they have more of the bigger musicals. But on any other level, we knock them down. They have nothing like Black Ensemble.
Oh, no.
Have they ever asked you to like mount some of more of your shows there?
Yes. Yes, I was asked to produce a New York Black Ensemble Theater, but I am not a New Yorker. I like New York. New York is wonderful. But do I want to be that kind of part of the cultural community? You can only do that kind of thing in one place. You can't split yourself up.
No, I agree with you.
I'm a Chicagoan. And
thank God you are, because where would we be? I mean, with this internet, because you have developed this niche. Your shows always run long because the demand is there for them. And how does that work? Because I know some theater groups try and do a subscription base. And I know there's pro and con. One is, you know where some of your dollars are coming from.
Mm-hmm.
But the other end, when you get a show that's really a hot show, because of the, you know, you've sold five shows, you got to give them five shows. You can't extend the shows as long as you want. What's your philosophy on that?
We have what we call the five play card at the Black Ensemble Theater. And what that does is that will allow for our subscribers to see five plays or to come to one show five times or to do anything in between. And that card is good for 2 years. And the reason that we do that is because we run our shows a long time. We want our subscribers, but at the same time, it's foolish business to have a hit and to close it to bring in another show that you're not for sure is going to hit or not. If you have a hit financially, you need to run that hit.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great idea, the way this flexible. That's something that more of the other theaters ought to consider. It's the best of both worlds.
Well, that's why I thought of it. It allows us to run the productions the way that we need to run them, but it also gives us some upfront income in terms of having a subscription base.
And I'm willing to bet a lot of people come back to see the same show more than once.
Oh my goodness, yes. Oh yes.
You know, because how many times you'd want to do that? But now, so that, and if you don't, because you do the five shows, then all you then get is five great shows. So
right.
Either way, you can't lose.
That's right.
That's a great idea. Mm-hmm. Now, your next show is going to be Billie Holiday.
Yes.
Have you started working on that?
Okay. I'm not writing that. That's being written by the Black Playwrights Initiative member, who is Dawn Mitchell. We have a Black Playwrights Initiative, which is a group of playwrights who are writing specifically for the Black Ensemble Theater.
You did start that a couple of shows ago. A
couple of years ago.
Yeah. And what is it? To expand. So it isn't Black Ensemble isn't just the Jackie Taylor.
That's right.
We're expanding.
Exactly, because you know, no, I don't want it to be one person doing everything, and Black Ensemble isn't. It is a definitely a strong organization and group effort, and we have the BPI to develop the scripts so that it doesn't fall on one person. So our young member, her name is Dawn Mitchell. And she is writing the script for Billie Holiday, which is Don't Shed a Tear.
Oh, Don't Shed a Tear.
Yeah.
I'm sure book-wise that's going to be strong. We know musically, mm-hmm. you know, the standard that Jimmy Tillman and you have put in, but she has a story to tell.
Wow, boy. But, does she have a story? Yes. Yes, she
and
does.
When are you planning on?
That will open sometime in late September.
And you think in late September?
Yes.
Okay. Tell us what the plans are for the future. I know you have a new location that you're working on.
Well, we bought a new building at 4440 North Clark Street. We are in the midst right now of our capital campaign. We're in the private part of it. and we are raising monies to build the new 300-seat state-of-the-art Black Ensemble Theater.
Is it going to be similar to?
It's going to be exactly like the theater is shaped now.
Because that's a great very feel. You're
intimate,
so close. Yes.
Where you can see all of the audience and the audience can see you and you're very close. It's going to be built exactly the same way, except it will have 300 seats.
How many seats do you have now?
150.
Oh, okay. So it's going to be double the size.
Right.
But it's going to be that I don't know what you call it, stadium.
Three quarter
mm-hmm. thrust.
Yes.
Stadium.
Yes.
Layout.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Exactly as it is now. We're not going to lose that. Not at all. That's one of the things people kept saying. Please don't change the theater. Please don't change the and so we're not.
It's good. You saved me from saying that because I was going to say, because it really adds that other element besides, you know, the elements that you have now. The other thing I wanted to mention that I'm starting to see in your shows, and I'm wondering how much that's going to change in the future, is you're starting to put a lot more dance. There's at least one or two really slick choreographed dance numbers in your shows now.
Mm-hmm.
Is that going to be a trend? Are we going to see more of the dance?
Well, you know, it's like McDonald's. Mm-hmm. You have your product, and then, you know, you put a little salad on the side, or you put a McRib in there every once in a while. But we're always enhancing, mm-hmm. because we want to bring the formula, but we want the formula to be new and different all the time. And dance, again, is a universal entity.
It is. And you have a dance director, right? A choreographer?
We have a new associate director who is a choreographer. His name is Ruben Eccles.
He's very talented.
And he's very, very talented.
So we're going to see more of the dance in some of the shows.
Oh, yes.
Okay, great. So the new location. You're going to just have the one theater and
We'll have two theaters.
Oh, you're going to have two.
We'll have a studio theater, which will be 150 seats, and then we'll have our main theater, which is the 300 seat.
So what is your plans for the studio theater? The same type of
shows,
or are you going to do some dramas or comedy?
We don't know yet. Okay. We know that everything is going to maintain that Black Ensemble style and tradition.
Okay.
But it does give us flexibility to do other things.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do a lot of development.
We'll see.
Okay.
But to begin with, we're going to stick with what we know best.
I also heard a rumor.
Oh, good.
About that you may make a deal with somebody to put a restaurant in the facility.
We're working on that,
okay.
And I can't say any more about that,
okay.
Except that we are working on developing a restaurant.
That's a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
Is there plans when you, as you move into the new facility? When is that? When are you targeting that?
We're targeting the fall of 2008.
Fall of 2008.
Yes.
Okay. So a little more than a year. Are you planning on, right now you do Friday, Saturday, and Sundays. Is it in the plan to expand?
Tuesday through Sunday.
Oh, you want to do Tuesday through Sunday.
Yes.
Yeah. And, that's great. And everybody needs to know, too, that this is top professional theater. You are an equity house.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You use equity actors.
Well, we use some equity actors.
Yeah.
For me, equity is a union. Yeah. There are non-equity houses that are very professional.
Oh, yes. Right.
So I wouldn't use that term that we're professional because we're equity. We're professional because we produce professional theater. But we also do not limit who works here. We want the non-union actors as well as the union actors.
What I also tell people about when they come to, your tickets are $35.
Yes.
And they see top talent, live musicians. How do you do it for $35?
Well,
I mean, downtown shows and concerts are over $100 a ticket. Downtown shows run from $72 to $85 a show, and your shows are as good, if not better, than most of the downtown shows.
We're trying to keep it affordable for the masses. You know, everybody can't afford a $100 ticket or a $70 ticket or a $50 ticket. You have to have a certain kind of income. So what we're trying to do is to keep the shows affordable so that more people can be exposed to the mission and philosophy of the Black Ensemble Theater.
Well, that's good. And it's got to be some tight management on your part, too, to keep it going at that rate, because if your shows were $50, it would be a bargain.
Well,
I mean, you know, it's relative to what you get for the, you know, the quality of what you get.
Sure. But we're, of course, you always have to raise the ticket price, and we'll probably raise the ticket price a little bit. But we're going to stay within what I feel is an average ticket price so that we can get more people. We want to be a theater for all the community, not just the people who can afford theater, but those people who might go to a movie and spend, you know, once you get out the movies, you spend $35 or $40.
Oh, yes. Yes.
So we want to try to get those people too.
Well, I think you're succeeding in that. You've got to feel good about what you've done. September starts your 30th year.
That's correct.
And how many more do you think you'll keep going?
Oh, at least another 30, 40, 50.
Another 30, 40.
Of course. Why not?
Sure. But what you're doing is so important. So tell us, although my last question was, because we're running out of time here. My last question is, who among these shows of the artists have come, the actual artists, to see the shows?
Well, Coco Taylor,
okay,
of course, has been here to see the production. Melba Moore.
But certainly if they're alive, you do talk to them and invite them. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Most definitely. Most definitely we do.
And what kind of?
The Shy Lights.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And you think Dionne Warwick is playing?
She's
going to come.
Oh, yes. She's coming.
And what are they pleased by it, by these shows?
When you sit and you're looking at your life on stage, that's a whole nother feeling of enrichment that most people don't get. So they are quite overwhelmed.
And then when they see how well you produced it too, they've got to feel great.
They feel wonderful.
How do you feel when you know they're coming? You get nervous when they're coming?
No, because I know that they're going to see something that is a tribute and something that is respectful and something that they can feel good about, something that will not negate who they are and what they've contributed to the community and to humanity. So I'm anxious for them to see it.
Okay. What's the phone number, and give us the address? Now's your time for a little commercial.
A little commercial. Black Ensemble Theater is 773-769-4451, and we're located at 4520 North Beacon,
which is right off Wilson and
in between
Clark.
Wilson and Montrose, right. 2 blocks east of Clark Street, 7 blocks west of Lakeshore Drive.
Okay, and only a short walk from the Wilson Red Line.
That's right,
which I take sometimes. And the shows are you do
Fridays and Saturdays at 8 and Sundays at 3.
And the current show, Dionne Warwick, is going to run at least until what?
August 27th is the anticipated closing date.
Right. But probably will go longer.
Probably.
Okay. And then Billie Holiday. I just can't wait for that.
Billie Holiday, don't shed a tear.
Last question. Where do you see yourself in Black Ensemble in the next few years?
Well, I see myself more into having the time to write my music, having the time to venture into other technological areas, such as putting my plays on videos and having getting them produced in other places on a national and international level. I see Black Ensemble as the premier theater company of the country, having a national presence as well as an international presence around the world, and fulfilling our mission of helping to eradicate racism from society.
You know, and somehow I know you're going to do that. And let me, eventually, one of your ensemble writers is going to do your story.
that would be something.
Thank you so much, and best of luck on you. And keep us informed, because I'm sure you're going to have a big gala when the new place opens.
Oh, yes. We have a big gala in October. Okay. And then we'll also have a big gala when we open the theater.
Okay. Yes. Well, because I know I get the information. We'll put it. We have a news segment on these podcasts too, and we'll put that in.
Great.
Thank you so much for a great interview. And folks, get the Black Ensemble. You will have such a good time. Trust me on that. Every show I go to, I come out of there saying, I don't know how they keep doing it, but they do. It's great theater.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, thank you very much for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. But before we let you go, it's time for your Shakespeare Quote of the Week. The following quote is a classic, and it comes from the tragedy of Macbeth, King of Scotland, Act 5, Scene 5. Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow creeps in this petty pace from day to day. Well, we can't thank you enough for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.